Welcome one and all. This podcast is sponsored by Cooker 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. As regular listeners will know, I love my hot water tap, so thank you Cooker for sponsoring these podcasts. I'm excited about today's podcast. Regular listeners will know also, I like learning things. Today, we're going to take a little journey into the arts to learn about opera. So here's the story. I went to a pub with my friends a few years ago, and I got talking to these women on the table next to us. We discovered one of them, Kim Lillian Strebel, is a well-respected opera singer. She is young and ridiculously talented. I bored her that night with a thousand questions. She was not what I really expected from an opera singer. I mean, she didn't look like an opera singer, and that's really cliche thing for me to say, but she was basically young, and I don't know, she just didn't really look like one, so it was kind of shocking. I've only been to one opera in my life. I had no idea what was going on, but I was blown away by the talent. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a great experience. I just love watching talented people. You know, whatever it is they do, whether it's, I don't know, singing opera, ballet, fishing, whatever it is, if they're good at it, I like watching them and I like to learn all about it. Anyway, let's meet her and find out more about opera. Here's Kim Lillian Strebel. Hi, Kim. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing?
Good. Whereabouts in the world are you at the moment?
I'm actually in Berlin. I just got back here from Zurich.
Okay, because your job means you have to travel a lot, don't you, around Europe or the world?
Well, actually the world. But I actually mainly sing in Germany at the moment.
Right, okay. We'll get into all that in a minute, but how's lockdown been for you and for opera? I'm sure it must have struggled like all the arts.
So actually life, I mean, in Germany, all the shops are still open, so you can still, you know, leave the house and go shopping. The restaurants are closed and the theatres are as well, but we actually still do have rehearsals. And I was just in Switzerland for 3 weeks in Zurich, and everything is open. The restaurants, it just doesn't feel like there's lockdown. It's completely, yeah, it's kind of very strange.
But the opera's not running, is it, at the moment?
No, the opera's not. I mean, in Zurich Opera House, they're just about to stream live, or maybe, no, that was yesterday. They did a whole opera, so they rehearsed and did like a premiere, but it was just live streamed.
Does opera have seasons? It always feels like opera happens sort of in the middle of the summer and then around Christmas time. That seems to happen with sort of ballet as well. It seems to really peak around Christmas time. Is that what happens with opera, or is it all year round?
No, we do actually have seasons. So we start at, for example, yeah, we start, most of the opera houses open in September and finish in July. So then we have mid-July, August free, which is so nice. So we have like a nice 6 weeks holiday in the summer, or I wouldn't actually call it a holiday because I end up having to actually learn all the music for the next season. Or there are summer festivals, which are really, you know, great to do as well. So some people just work all the year round.
You know what, when I've been thinking about opera and when I look into it, you know, you do know, don't you? I know nothing about opera. I've been to one. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm overwhelmed by the talent, but I really don't understand what's going on. But it does feel very competitive, and it feels very much like a sport. Critiques are very, they sharpen. Yeah, harsh is true. Yeah. And as soon as you put yourself in that world of, hey, I'm a good singer and I'm an opera singer, you've got a lot of people who are, you know, who want to set that bar high for you, don't they?
Oh, it's actually, I mean, you have to learn to grow such a thick skin, because people can be so vicious about you. And it's not, you know, you take it so personally because it's your instrument inside you. You were born with this voice and you can't do much apart from, you know, train incredibly hard and get a fantastic technique. But if they don't like the color of your voice, you know, it's such a taste thing. And then they can be so mean. I mean, in my days, I've had some really mean critics.
Okay, first time you've made me confused. What does color mean in voice?
So color is like a timbre you will also not know, right? It's like some people have a bright sound, some people have a dark sound. Does that make any sense?
No, but we'll go with it. I'm sure our listeners will try and make up their own mind what you're saying. All right, let's go back to the very first question. The bit I said in my intro is when I first met you in a pub, and I was so shocked that you're an opera singer. And this is horrible, not PC, and so cliche. But my assumption has always been that opera singers are both are male and female, are both middle aged and on the chunkier side to get the right and we've always assumed that they're there and that and then they've got that build because that's how you get the best voice. However, you're young and you're thin, so I was like, what, you're an opera singer? Does that annoy you, that cliche?
No, I find it actually quite, you know, it's like the old school, that's like the imagination of like an old opera singer. I have to say, I have the same, you know, I mean, that's my idea of what, before I started singing, what an opera singer was like as well. But these days, it's really about, you need to be so flexible and mobile on stage in order to fulfill these directors' dreams, which is, I mean, singing upside down, running around, doing anything they want. And you can't be, you know, unfit. I mean, you can be any size. And if you're fit enough to do it, it doesn't matter. But sadly also, I think it has become quite superficial in what you look like. I mean, you know, people are going to choose someone who's hot over someone who's not hot, right? You know, which,
I follow you on Instagram and you do a lot of fitness, so you clearly it's like a sport, you have to stay fit for your art, don't you? Because I'm
what
sure
do you mean by me doing a lot of fitness? That's really interesting, because I don't think I do any fitness.
Or were you doing, there was a stage where you were doing a lot of yoga and things.
Oh yeah, that was during lockdown. I was trying to, yeah, I would say I am, you know, I do a lot of singing practice and running around on stage, but I would say I could up my game in being more, you know, doing exercise, actual exercise. I like to walk, right. But doing full-on exercise is just not quite me. But I was very lucky because I grew up with doing ballet, jazz, and all this dancing and ice skating. So I feel like I got my body in shape through that from a very early age.
Okay, I'm going to go back to your youth in a minute and how you got into opera. But first of all, how so we can get an understanding, how much when you're performing in an opera, how much is singing and how much is acting?
Oh, it's the same. I mean, I'm acting while singing. It's full-on acting. You have to be a fantastic actress in order to really captivate your audience. You can't just sing. That's super boring. You have to really tell a story. And if you don't, I mean, that's not, you can't do that anymore.
How many languages do you sing in?
Every language. I just learned my first Russian opera and performed it. That was my only premiere this season, was this role called, the opera is called Mazeppa by Tchaikovsky. It's absolutely gorgeous music. And I had to learn it in Russian. So I was frantically having Russian lessons. And yeah, I managed to do it. And it is such a beautiful language. Loved it every moment.
All right. So you speak, obviously, English, German and Italian. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, and Swiss German.
So you generally an opera, we imagine, is sung in Italian or German, is it? Is that correct?
Yeah, and French and Russian and Czech. I mean, pretty much every language is an opera.
So when you're singing a Russian opera, you've been given the job, you've been given the gig, you know, you're saying you're learning Russian, but can you just sing it by learning just the words of the opera, or do you have to have an understanding of what you're actually singing?
You have to literally, not only do you have to memorize the Russian, you have to memorize what you're saying word by word. Otherwise, it's not going to be convincing on stage. especially when you're interacting. And you have to also learn the other person's part so that you know how to react to what he or she is singing to you.
Oh my God, how long does it take to learn an opera?
Months. But I'm getting much faster over the years. Yeah, it's so much work. It's not just, you know, rehearsing for 6 weeks and then doing the shows. The preparation is insane. And also the money you invest in it. No one pays for it. You have to pay it all yourself. And then, you know, when you obviously sing the show, you get the money back. But what's been terrible is that, you know, people have been learning and investing all this money and time in learning operas, and then they get cancelled and no one is there to kind of give you money.
All right. Again, my ignorance. What are you actually investing money in? Coaches? What is it you're investing?
Exactly. Coaches, language coaches, musical coaches. So how to interpret this style of music, and your singing lessons, which is like technical. So how to kind of get a great high note, or how to, you know, sing a quick passage of notes. Does that make sense?
No, I love it, because it's like you could actually be speaking to me in German now, because I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
But
I love it. I think it's fascinating. So you take on a Russian opera and you go, right, so I need to interpret this. Do you then try and find someone on a keyboard? A piano or something.
Yeah, exactly. And they then teach you the notes, you know, the melody.
Right.
And then you're like, okay, so this is this phrase. And then you, when you've learned the notes, I mean, this is not in the order, but then you go to a Russian person and then you know, they tell you how to pronounce it in a phonetical way, because obviously I don't speak Russian. But luckily I learned phonetics in school at the Royal Academy of Music. I feel like that was like the best thing that I ever learned, by the way. And then you, when you, you know, feel it's in your body, you go to your technical teacher and you work on the passages that feel uncomfortable or who could be more beautiful sounding. And then you put it all together.
So are the coaches as valuable as the singers?
Oh, 100%. Without the coaches, I mean, we'd be going haywire. I mean, they're the experts. They know, you know, they studied what things are meant to sound like and, you know.
Right. And so you're dual nationality, aren't you? But you grew up in Britain. Is that correct?
I was born in London and then 2 weeks later I went to Zurich. So I lived there for 11 years.
Right. Where is opera popular? I mean, do we have a lot of opera singers in Britain? I mean, I assume Italy, I assume Germany. Where are the opera singers coming from?
I mean, coming from all around the world, but I would say the biggest opera base is Germany. Every village and town have a little opera house. It's quite astounding.
Okay, so let's go through your history then. How did you end up becoming an opera singer? How did it start?
Oh God, I mean, I really want to be an opera singer. I honestly just fell into this job. It's so bizarre. I started off at 5 ballet dancing in Switzerland and ice skating. I loved figure skating so much. And then I did some jazz. I played the cello. And I have a mum who is, she's actually kind of Russian, Hungarian and Czech. And her motto was always, if you're going to do something, you're going to do it 100%. Otherwise, we give it up, which has been like such an incredible learning for actually this career, because if you want to do something really well, you have to do it 100%. Otherwise, it's a waste of time. And then, so that's how it started. And then when we moved to London, I went to arts educational school because I wanted to continue ballet. So I did that for 2 years. And then I decided, you know what? I actually want to be a dentist, which is super random. And I decided to go to a more academic school. And I went to this school, and sadly, we didn't discover that I was hugely dyslexic. So I was really struggling with all my studying, and yeah, people just thought I was stupid and lazy, and you know. And then with 16, they realized, okay, they analyzed my exam papers and realized that I just didn't do half the paper. So that was frustrating. And so then I only had 2 years, and I mean, I could barely learn the, you know, new skills that they had, which now obviously they have incredible skills for dyslexic people, which I'm actually still thinking about. I'd love to go and have some, you know, study skill lessons.
Do you know it's the ism of the future, as in sexism, racism, whatever. And I don't know what the actual term is. It's like a brainism or something. People's brains don't all work the same. And yet, yeah, for years, people with dyslexia were told they were stupid and slow. And it's completely, as we know, it's wrong. It's just the brain's working in a slightly different way. Yet there's still a lot of prejudice against dyslexia. And it's becoming a really big thing that people's brains, and autism as well. I had someone on my TV show who discussed it and said it's going to be a big thing which comes along soon, that if you're ever highlighting someone's different brain and setting them aside, it's an ism. It's like a, you know, it's going to be one of those things that we've got to start sort of saying no, everybody's equal, really. It's just our brains are working in different ways. Anyway, I interrupted you, so where were you in your story?
Well, with the dyslexia, I mean, I have to say it's really kind of scarred me for life, this whole, just being, you know, your teachers calling you stupid. And then actually when you do something really well, I remember for my GCSEs, geography, I did a great job of it because I had loads of time, coursework, you know, I had time. It's all about, I needed more time. I was just slower at processing, understanding things. And they took me in to make me have a like test to make sure I had done this work.
Right.
It was okay. So hurtful. You know, you're just terrible. Like, wow. Anyway, so, and then at this school, I wanted to do all the sciences, but biology was so much work and I just couldn't fit it in. And my parents were going through divorce also during my A-levels. So that was kind of a write-off year. But I was singing in the choir there, and the music teacher, she heard my voice and kept giving me little solos. And she was married to a phenomenal tenor called, he's sadly passed away, Anthony Rolf Johnson. And he came to one of the concerts and heard me singing at school and said to me afterwards, would you like to take lessons? And I said, yes. So I started having lessons with him. And this was at the age of 16 only. And I was then in this limbo of, I really wanted to go to university because all my friends were going, but I didn't know what to do because I couldn't do dentistry because I just didn't have the grades. And then my music teacher, she said, why don't you try for music school and sing? And I said, oh, why not? And I just went to audition for like the Royal Academy, the Royal College, the Guildhall School of Music, and didn't get in anywhere. But I got up in Manchester. They gave me like a reserve place. So I thought, okay, well, whatever. I will take a gap year and maybe reapply again the next year. And I went traveling around the world, backpacking, you know, as some people do at the age of 18. And then I reapplied without barely practicing, I have to say. And I got in everywhere with scholarships. It was bizarre.
Why?
It was so weird. It was so weird. But it was just about the voice maturing, you know? It's just the voice needs time. It's something that just happens. Still now, my voice is constantly developing and changing. The older you get, the more mature it sounds.
So how long was it from you going into which school did you choose in the end?
The Royal Academy of Music.
Perfect. Is that the best one?
I mean, it's one at the top, yeah.
And how long before you enter that school before you're singing opera then?
Well, that was a bachelor for 4 years, and then I did a 2 years opera school in Scotland at the Royal Scottish Conservatoire. I went up there because the program is fantastic and they let me skip postgrad and go straight into the opera course because I couldn't financially pay for another 4 years of studying. That would be 8 years in total. So I just, and they thought I was good enough. So I just skipped and I just went on a mission up there. I mean, I had no distractions. I just was like, bam, I've got to do this now.
And what do you do at opera school apart from sing, or is that all you do? 8 hours a day?
No, and the worst was at the Royal Academy, my bachelor, I thought I was just literally going to go and sing. Well, I had a nasty surprise when I got there. It's so academic. It was crazy. I had to play a piano concerto and I'd never played the piano. I had to just memorize it, like my finger positions.
Did you do
to
it?
Pass. Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, honestly, I'd be sitting at the piano crying, being like, I will never get through this. I had to do all these like oral ear exams, all this theory, write essays. It was so hard.
Are you quite a natural with music, though? Does it come easy to you?
I wouldn't say the academic part, no, but singing, yes.
is music like a... I'm so ignorant. I have no knowledge of music at all, but is it like another language?
Oh, for sure. There's so much terminology. It's.
But when you're hearing tunes, is that like when you're... Because obviously you can speak multiple languages. When you're hearing... music coming, is it, are you adapting it like you, so if you're hearing German, you're hearing German. When you're hearing music, are you thinking, okay, I know how to interpret this?
Exactly, you interpret it with all these, like, again, I'm gonna talk say words that you probably won't know what I'm saying, but like you'll be like, oh yeah, that's that chord progression, that's that in that key, oh here, you know, there's a crescendo, a diminuendo, a forte, you know, you just analyze it. I think it's also, you know, when you look at a painting, you would analyze what the artist has, you know, used for all the, I don't know. Well, everyone interprets music in a different way. But if you interpret it in a very nerdy sort of just academic way, you come with all the same structures. But then how you feel about the music is another thing.
So when was the first time a director took a chance on you and gave you a part in an opera?
Well, I did this. I auditioned for the choir of the Bayreuther Festspiele, which is the most, it's the Wagner. Do you know Wagner?
Yeah.
cool. Just checking.
I'll tell you what, it's good you check because, you know, my knowledge.
Yeah, I don't want to just go on about something new, like, what is Wagner? So it's this festival that happens in the summer and it's only Wagner, and Mr. Wagner, he built this opera house for his music, and it has a really special structure and the pit, which is where the orchestra is in, and it makes the sound like the most fantastic sound for this type of music.
Okay.
And I got this place in my first year doing my opera school up in Scotland, I got the chance to go and sing in the chorus, which was incredible. So it was like nine weeks of me for the first time on a real opera stage. I mean, I was just in the chorus, but it just blew my mind. And it made me realize, okay, I want to do this. I was watching all these solo singers, you know, the opera singers. I was like, wow. And I fell in love with the music so much. I mean, Wagner to this day is still my favorite.
How old were you then?
25.
So you one of the is that about the right age to start standing on the stage and singing opera?
Yeah, I would say I was really good age.
Yeah, you can't, because obviously over in Britain, the Charlotte Church thing, when she was 12 or something, she's out singing opera. Surely it takes a long time before your voice develops into, you need experience, don't you? You need a bit of time to develop a voice, I assume.
Well, it depends what kind of thing you sing. I mean, Charlotte Church sings different stuff to what I sang. And if I was that age, I would have sung the same stuff as Charlotte Church. But it depends on your age and the color of your voice.
Right, okay.
Like, it also depends on how high your voice can sing up and how low your voice. So, you know, if you're singing kind of roles that sound very young sounding, then, and you're young, it's perfect. You can sing the roles that are meant to be for young people on stage.
So how many years after standing on the stage then does it take before you start getting offered proper roles?
Well, so that was just this summer thing. And then I went back to college and I learned, you know, from all talking to all the German people there, that there's this thing called opera studio. And it's this thing that you do, kind of, you go into an opera house and you're like a young artist and you do a 1 or 2 year course, which is, you know, they have them all around the world, these, and you get a small amount of money, but they give you chances to sing small roles on the stage, you know, in the productions. They give you coachings and just guide you before you kind of go in the, you know, in the real world. So I decided, okay, well, I have to apply for these. So I went back to college after the summer and just applied for about 20 different places. And they're so competitive. There'll be like one soprano, one bass, one baritone, and one mezzo and tenor. So one of each voice type available. So you're going against like thousands and thousands of opera singers to get these places. But I just was like, okay, I'm going to fill out all these forms, make a demo CD and send it off. And I did that, and I did so many auditions, and it was quite, you know, really interesting. But I was so lucky enough. I got 3 different offers: Basel, Zurich Opera House, and then Berlin, the Deutsche Oper. And I chose the Deutsche Oper Berlin because it was, I mean, they offered me such incredible roles already in straight away.
What sort of voice do you have then?
I'm a soprano, a lyric. Now, kind of going more into the dramatic.
What's the difference?
So dramatic means just, it's more, what it, I mean, dramatic, you know, it's dramatic.
You're more dramatic.
I think in dramatic roles, like divas who are dramatic.
I imagine it's always quite a snobby industry. Did you always have pure confidence in your voice every time you went for an audition? Did you think, yeah, I know I can do this, I'm going to be great?
No, I mean, honestly, I was so insecure, and I just felt like I was sometimes so crap. And if you have a bad day, and I'm so bad at auditions. I don't think, it's rare that I got a job from an audition. It's just really so uncomfortable. It's horrible. I really don't enjoy auditions. I think my last audition I did, which was last year, it was such a spontaneous one, and I went in my tracksuit, no makeup, just a hair up in a bun, and just couldn't give a shit, basically. And they loved it. They were like, wow, this is so cool and edgy. So from now on, I'm always wearing sneakers, and I just, to be honest, I just don't care anymore. I'm like, take it or leave it, you know?
Cool. What's the crowd like? Because you're saying they want something edgy. Again, you know, my ignorance, but I've always assumed it's quite a snobby audience. Does the audience differ in different countries? And are you getting young people through to watch operas?
Well, for example, at the Komische Oper Berlin, there's this incredible director, and he's the boss of the opera house. It's called an intendant, Barry Kosky, and he's super edgy and cool and brings such a young audience in to see shows because they're just so for today. Like the shows are just so fantastic. And then you have like other opera houses which are much more stereotypical, like the traditional way of, performing opera. So I feel like many opera houses have different kind of audiences depending on what, they're like, what the directors are like there.
I've always sort of assumed operas they'd all been written and that was it, and then we've got all our operas and now let's just keep performing the same operas. But I ignorantly, I'm sure there's lots of different operas being written constantly. What's the percentage, do you think, of the old ones you do and the new ones?
Oh, we do so many, the old ones, the classics, for sure. People want to hear the classics. But of course, there are new composers constantly, and it's a very big thing to produce new modern operas, for sure.
So what are the skills then? I assume this is going to be quite hard to answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway. You've got someone who can bang out a tune, a pop tune, and then you've got your lot, your opera singers. What's the difference? What skills do you have that the person banging out a pop song doesn't have?
Well, if you're saying like they're just banging it out, are you talking about someone who's a professional banging out singer? Or
Someone who's had a hit single, let's talk about
okay.
them. But they're hitting notes, but they're not in the same
This
league as
has
you
come
lot are.
across so like wrong. You're like putting me really in a spot there.
I'm not supposed to. I'm not supposed to. I'm not trying to do that. Because obviously we all know that to sing opera
I
is
can just tell
a
you what it takes.
go on then.
Let's put it like that. So, first of all, it never ends on my technically, I'm constantly having to work every day. I have to practice technique, just only the voice, how it functions for about at least 1 hour to 1.5 hours every day. I have to warm my body up. I have to stretch. I have to get my air, my breathing all flowing. All of that is just before you even sing the actual opera. Then you have to spend hours learning the language, the pronunciation. Then you have to learn how to interpret it. Then you have to learn the staging of what the director does, which you work 8 hours a day on that for 6 weeks before you premiere the show. Then you have to do rehearsals with the orchestra and be together with the conductor who is waving his arm, giving you the beats, and act at the same time. So you have to kind of have like antlers of seeing the conductor from one angle, acting with your partner, maybe doing some crazy movements, singing in a foreign language, and making sense of it. Do you see what I mean? I mean, it is
Yeah, it's a tough job. Jeez.
so much. And on top of everything, the discipline that goes into keeping this voice super healthy. You can't drink alcohol before a show because, the acid. You can't get any reflux because it affects your vocal folds. You have to eat, a special diet in order also to not get reflux. You have to be so careful of not getting sick. So you're constantly being like, are you sick? Why are you coughing? Okay, I have to move away from you. So I was actually wearing masks for my whole career. So wearing a mask is nothing new to me since the pandemic. I was always wearing a mask,
Do you
and
know
everyone
what
was looking at me like I was a bloody weirdo.
that's do you know that's fascinating, because for years when I had my production companies and stuff and working, people used to come in ill and I used to go, "What are you doing? You're going to get us all ill. Go home. I don't want you around me if you're ill." And when we had the Brownlee brothers, do you know them? They're the triathletes, the British triathletes who do really well. When they came in, their PR people to my TV show, the PR people said, they won't shake your hand because they don't want to get ill. They were actually really cool, but it was the people around them were just going, look, they can't take risks. They just literally don't want to get ill, because then you muck up the training, which is similar to what you're saying.
I mean, exactly. Do you know what's so weird? I just had all my stuff shipped over from storage in London to Berlin, and I looked at old coats. In every coat pocket, I have the disinfectant gel from years ago. Right. I've been doing this for years. It's so... And you know what's kind of going to bum me big time out is when everyone's been vaccinated, no one's going to wear masks anymore, and it's going to be back to this game of, oh, I'm going to catch a cold.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, people are going to look at me as if like I'm paranoid still about corona. But no. You know, or like on the plane, I'm like, you're coughing. Excuse me, could I have a different seat? Mm. You know, that's the life of an opera singer, is constantly dodging getting sick.
I wonder if our behavior will change after the pandemic. I think it will a bit. I was in Japan at the beginning of this year, and they all wear masks there on the subway tubes, or whatever you call them, on the trains. And I thought it was quite odd, but I sort of get it, you know. And I think the idea that if you're ill, you wear a mask, I think that's the best one.
I know. Then at least you know, oh, you're sick, I'll stay with you.
you're protecting. How are your neighbors? If you're practicing an hour and a half every day, I'm sure you could, because am I right in saying in opera you don't use sound systems?
No, it's all from us. Yeah.
So you've got to get a volume going.
Absolutely.
Projection. So surely your neighbors must be like, oh, here she goes again. Jesus Christ. Kim, yeah. Knock it off.
Well, imagine, you would have probably heard me in Chiswick singing, because I was always singing at my mom's house. Poor neighbors, because that's like really condensed. But actually, when I'm in Germany, I always go to the opera houses to practice. So I don't really sing at home.
Is that an amazing feeling when you walk into one of those places? For the Teenage Cancer Trust, I presented at the Royal Albert Hall a lot of times. And when you just stand in that place and you just know it's all meant for performance, you just go, this is absolutely incredible. I couldn't believe it every time. I did about 5 years in a row. Just standing on that stage was phenomenal. Is that what it feels like for you when you walk into these places?
Yeah, it's such a special moment. It really is. Mm. It's quite magical.
Can I be slightly crude? If you're at the top end of your industry, is it good money to be made?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, yeah.
Is there
maybe any... some people might say like, no, what are you talking about? But no, I mean, I was going to have a really good year this year, but that went to shits.
Sorry to laugh, but that just made me laugh. Is the ambition to cross over to become commercial enough to record, say like Pavarotti or someone who we all know who ends up selling CDs these days, it'd be streaming, I suppose, but I don't know. But is that the ambition of every opera singer, to be able to cross over enough so that they can start selling music?
No, I don't think that they want to cross over and go into more like pop, but it is to become a recording artist is everyone's dream. But at the moment, I don't think there's much money in that, you know?
Yeah.
To like release an album, I don't think you get rich from that.
Are the roles of the genders quite equal as well? It seems to me when I watch operas, again, ignorance here, but it seems there's just as many female leads as male leads. Is that correct, or am I being stupid?
No, I think there's still more male, especially like small roles are more male small roles in an opera.
Right.
I might be wrong, but I think so.
But there's plenty of work, isn't there? And always has been in opera for women, for female voices.
I mean, when you mean plenty of work, all opera singers can get work, or just...
I'm saying that the roles, there's a lot of female roles.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm. It's not like there's only like five roles that you can sing. No, there's loads.
How many people are there in a production?
On stage or off backstage?
Well, let's go with the people singing. You've got a full orchestra, have you? Most operas, and then you've got a conductor. How many in an orchestra? There's quite a few in an orchestra, isn't there?
Yeah, it really depends on what kind of opera it is. It can be up to 100.
Right, and then you've got
Got the whole cast, which would be like 10 singers, and then you have maybe a whole choir, which can be up to 100 people as well, like Wagner choir. Wow.
What, 100 people singing in the choir?
Yeah, there can be.
What's the point in that?
It sounds super phenomenal.
Isn't that going to drown out the solo?
No, we have to cut over it. And I mean, we don't sing. They'll have to sing a bit quieter when we sing.
I wish you could see what is going on in my brain at the moment, because my brain is going, I just don't understand what he's saying.
Need to come when the world is normal again. You need to come and see some shows that I'm singing in.
I'd love to, especially if they're abroad. I'd like to go to one in Berlin or something and come and see.
Yeah, for sure. You need to come.
That would be a great experience. But the only one I saw was in London, and it had subtitles running across the top. So I spent the first 10, 15 minutes, maybe more, reading the subtitles. And then I was thinking, I'm not enjoying myself here. And then eventually I just gave up the subtitles, gave up the story, and just let the sound engulf me. And I was totally blown away by it. I was just listening to these people sing at me going, wow, this is absolutely incredible. And the sound just waved over me constantly. And I was like, how are they making that much noise? Honestly, the ability they've got was phenomenal. So I loved it, but I've never gone back, which is weird, because I did enjoy
it. Do you remember which opera you saw?
Literally no idea.
Okay.
My friend, I was basically talking to a friend of mine, and she said to me, have you never been to an opera? I said, no. And she goes, right, I'm getting us tickets. And that was it. And we went to and do that. I did a similar thing with ballet, but I went back to ballet. I've been back to ballet a load of times. And the thing I love about ballet is just the energy they put. I've seen, lucky enough to see Carlos Acosta dance a few times. And you just see the effort they put on stage. And sorry to be such a, I don't know what the word is, but just it kind of looked like a sport to me, watching the way they get on that stage and they put the effort in, and the way after, you know, when they finish their act and they're stood there, their chests are getting so much oxygen in because the amount of effort. And it's the same with the opera singers, it takes a lot out of you singing an opera, doesn't it?
Oh my god, I'm dead. I sweat so much. I'm just dead after a show. My whole body physically is exhausted.
So you have to make sure you look after your voice.
Yeah, the whole time.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Listen, a lot of manuka, honey, just to let you know.
A lot of manuka, honey. If people wanted to get into opera, if they wanted, from two points. One, if you were a little kid and you wanted to sing, is that the way in? You have to go via the schools, the music schools?
You have to train. I mean, you don't have to go to a school, but you have to have a phenomenal voice teacher and coach.
Mm. And if you're a punter like myself and you want to get into opera, where should you start? What should you go and see? What sort of things should you?
I would go and see a real classic like La Bohème. Maybe La Traviata, Verdi, The Magic Flute by Mozart. Mm. Things like that, real classics. It's easy to get it into the ear.
And am I right in saying, just for the first time, forget the story, just let it all wash over you, the sounds and the noise?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Let's take it in.
There's questions I ask all my guests, so I'm going to do the same with you. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, by the way. My brain is going 100 miles an hour trying to figure out what the hell's going on, but there you go. So I'm going to ask you the questions I ask everyone. What one piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that has been invaluable to your life?
That I would say the most important thing for me is that even when people put you down and you get horrible critique and people don't believe in you, if your gut says that you can do this, just continue and don't give up. Just go for it.
Can the critics completely trash a show?
Oh, people boo.
What, opera?
Yes. Like, you'll be bowing. I mean, it's never happened to me, but people go, boo. I remember this show I did, Rigoletto, and the tenor was booed. The main star was booed. I mean, horrendous. Like, I don't understand why people would do that. So much effort's gone into it. Just because they don't like it, like, just clap maybe less, but don't boo.
That's horrific.
Yeah, it's so nasty. I don't know what's up with people.
How many shows do you have to do in a run?
It's about 8.
Oh, so you do all that training, all that work for 8 shows?
About 8 to maybe, if it's like more, maybe 15. But for example, like the Magic Flute where I sing Pamina, I've done this, oh my God, I should actually start counting how many times, but I've sung it all around the world and so many times.
Right.
But then you just do it again, you know?
It's funny with critics, because whenever I'm sort of, because obviously we have to discuss stuff on my TV show sometimes, and whenever I really struggle with criticizing other people's work, especially if it's like a film I've gone to see and people say, what's it like? And, you know, if you ask me just on one-on-one, I'd tell you, but when I'm broadcasting, you know, I've never made a film. So what right have I got to go
exactly. Yeah, that's crap.
I didn't enjoy that. That's rubbish. It's like, yeah.
I totally agree. And it's like, you know, if you're writing a critique, I understand it's very important to have that, but it's such a personal view on something. Maybe just be a bit more broad, you know? I don't know.
I don't think it's a healthy job being a critique. I think we all think, wouldn't it be great to go around reviewing restaurants or films or something? But it's good to go, this is brilliant. It's not so good to say, I didn't like this. You know, people have put effort into it. Right, what's something you think people should know?
I would say... this is going to come really funny, but wear a mask when the pandemic is over, when you're sick.
Yeah, we should do it. We should adopt it. I think you're right. We should all adopt that. I think that's a good idea. Right, have you got any life hacks? This could be anything, maybe travel tips or something like that.
Yes, I have really good how to not get sick on a plane. Drink 2 liters of water, put moisturizer or like Vaseline in your nose to keep it moist so that when the air conditioning from the airplane, you don't dry out, because when you dry out your nose, your nostrils, the bacteria really enjoy it in there. So if you put moisturizer in, they stay away. And
yeah, go on.
Wear this Humiflyer mask, which is from Australia, and it keeps your voice moist, and it actually helps a lot with jet lag.
It turns out that airplanes are the enemy of my guest, Jasmine Sawyer, who's our long jumper, British long jumper. When she was on this podcast, when her life hack was, when you got onto an aeroplane, I think it was her life hack, but anyway, she discussed it. She always takes antibacterial wipes. And the first thing does is wipe down all the chair in front of her there.
Yeah, I do the same. Yeah, everything.
Does all
like
that.
People are staring at me, you know, especially on long haul flights. I'm like disinfecting my whole area. And they're just like, you weirdo. I'm like, no.
I think that's great. Is there something you've changed your mind about?
Yeah, I used to always think I had to fit in this industry and be more like this. I never felt like I really fitted in to the opera business. I've always felt I was a bit different. And I feel like now it doesn't matter so much, and it's progressed a lot that I feel more I do fit in. So just being yourself is, yeah, I just changed my mind about me changing to fit in rather than just being myself.
Perfect. Can you recommend a book?
Well, I've just started reading one and it's so good. It's called A New Earth and it's Eckhart Tolle. Do you know it?
Nope. What's that
yeah,
about?
It's interesting. Well, I can't tell you yet, but it's about working on your ego.
Good idea. We'll do about that. And the final question is, what's the meaning of life?
For me, it's just finding happiness, being happy, content, not always striving for the next thing, but just being more present.
Are you happy when you're on the stage singing?
Yeah, I love it.
Is there magical moments when you just think, I'm in the flow here, nothing can go wrong, I'm hitting the notes?
It's the most incredible feeling ever. It's like a meditation for me. It's so freeing. Singing so loud and it's so from the gut just releases all your tension.
Can you see the music? What are those people called, the ones who can see the music coming in colors? How do you experience music? Can you see it? Can you feel it?
No, I don't see it like that. It sounds very interesting though. No, I just feel it. It's like more something that goes into my heart and it's, you know, can be so emotional. Like, for example, if I listen to Parsifal Overture and Tannhäuser Overture, it can make me cry.
And when you're singing, do you get overcome with emotions as well, or do you have to?
Yeah, I have moments where it's just like, it makes my own skin kind of have goosebumps when it's like so, the orchestra is playing and you're singing with them. It's just such a magical moment.
I tell you, it's that thing of what you've just explained then. It's really funny because when I stopped reading the subtitles, I just started tingling a bit all over because
exactly.
I was like, I can't believe the sound which comes from the stage. Doing that. I'd love to have gone somewhere where there's 100 people in the choir. That must sound absolutely insane.
It's crazy. You know what's also super interesting is so many people are working on these breathing exercises, you know, to make you more happy and
yes,
your brain and all this. And then I did a course on it, and it's so interesting because I kind of stopped singing for like a week in lockdown because I was just like, why am I doing this? You know, why am I bothering? Like, I don't even know if I'm ever, I mean, I was reading stuff where it said, the opera houses will be closed for 2 years. And you're just like, you know, you just go in a depression really. And then I didn't sing. And then I realized when I did sing again, my brain, like it just frees up and I'm not sad anymore because I'm breathing. I'm using this intense breath control. And so if people aren't up for doing like actual just breathing exercises, just sing because it does the same thing. So for me, when I sing, it's just like I get my whole brain, it just releases all the tension and everything.
Do you know what? That's such a great idea because I've been on this podcast. I think I've interviewed 3 people about breathing. And they all say the same thing. What happens is life gets you down and you curl up in a little ball and all the muscles around your rib cage, they all start stiffening up. And the main thing is your diaphragm, you know, it's not working properly. You're breathing shallow, more shallow. Yeah. And what they try and get you to do is get upright, open your chest up, get the diaphragm working again and literally get oxygen into your body. That is the whole thing. And that's what you're doing is singing, isn't it? So that is such fantastic advice. Brilliant. Kim, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I understood maybe 50% of what you said.
That's terrible. So I'm really bad at explaining.
No, you're not. You just made it sound so interesting. And I'm sure some of our listeners will go off and try and get themselves to an opera because, you know, they want to experience
I will give you a ticket to come and see me sing.
Thank you. I'd love
to. In Berlin.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
All right.
Cheers.
Dear Lovejoy is written and hosted by Tim Lovejoy and produced by Blake Fellows. It's brought to you by Cooker, spelled Quooker. Check them out at cooker.co.uk. That's spelled Q-U-O-O-K-E-R. If you want to get in touch with Tim, email dearlovejoy@gmail.com. And Tim is on Twitter @TimLovejoy and on Instagram @TimLovejoy_official.